I want to bring in my good friend, Dr. John Green, professor of political science, University of Akron, for some insight this morning. And as most of you know, the United States had some strikes inside Yemen, into the Syria area, in the Middle East over the weekend. That was the response to the military personnel from the United States. Three of them losing their lives in an ambush of militia that was backed by Iranian military. Now, 34 Americans were also injured in that melee. A drone attack was led. The United States response was quick and swift. What does this possibly mean in a high-tension political year for the United States? And I want to bring in Dr. Green on that aspect right there. And, John, how about the response, first of all, by the United States over the weekend?
Well, you know, when American personnel are attacked, let alone injured or with their deaths, there absolutely has to be a response. That's partly for domestic political reasons. You know, we get irritated when people attack us, but also for reasons of international relations. You can't let an attack like that go without a response because it just encourages more attacks. And so, you know, I think President Biden took his time. It was a well-considered attack that figured out, you know, where they could do appropriate amount of damage given the initial assault, but also with avoiding trying to escalate the conflict there in the Middle East. And that's one of the really big dangers here. You know, there are a lot of actors in this complex and volatile situation, and many of them have, you know, their own agendas, and many of them want to provoke some kind of wider conflict because that believes, you know, that will serve their agenda. You know, a lot of people wanted President Biden to, you know, go to the source, to strike Iran directly on their territory, you know, do some real damage. The danger with that, though, is it could escalate the conflict in that region. And, you know, once you escalate, it's really difficult to de-escalate. So, you know, I think the president's response was entirely appropriate. Hopefully it will prevent the spread of a wider conflict in the region.
Well, as we've learned in history, right, John, it's easy to get into a war. It's more difficult to get out of one. And I think you led right down the road where I've been walking for a number of months when you talk about Israel and Hamas there. And now you talk about this situation. It almost seems like there are those globally that want the United States, that want Israel engaged in conflicts, like they want escalation. Now, you know this area much better than I do. Why would there want to be an escalation if that is the end game in this situation?
Well, you know, I think there are a number of different motives, and let me just suggest a couple of them. You know, some of the actors there, whether it's Iran or Hamas or Hezbollah or any number of the other people, groups that are involved there, many of them see this as a way to move the United States away from its strong support for Israel, particularly in this current conflict in Gaza, which is, you know, has its own complexities. So I think that's a part of it. Also, there are groups that really believe that it would be valuable in their interests to tire the United States of its involvement in the Middle East. And, you know, all during my lifetime and your lifetime, right, the United States has been deeply involved in the Middle East for all kinds of important reasons, not the least being the supply of oil that comes out of the Persian Gulf. And there are people who in that region who really believe that you can wear great powers out, that they get tired of these kinds of conflicts. And so a removal of America or diminishment of American influence in the region would serve certain actors. And then, of course, there's a special case of Iran. It is a rising power. It's a big country, has a large population. It has a lot of oil. It has strategic relationships with China and with Russia. And it's trying to expand its influence in the Middle East. It would like to become, in the language of international relations, the hegemonic power in the Middle East, supplanting Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Turkey, and moving the United States, you know, into some kind of conflict might aid Iran in those broader aspirations. So I think there are a lot of agendas here, and that's part of what makes it complicated when the United States thinks about its policy and response.
A lot of people, too, in doing some reading, John, and we're with Dr. John Green, professor of political science at the University of Akron. When you connect the dots, right, John, you mentioned Iran maybe behind this, and then you look at the connection with Russia, you look at the connection with China, and then you look at those countries in that part of the world trying to build an alliance, right, between those three, and gaining a lot of support from other countries like Egypt and so on as well, trying to head off the West, to say, led by the United States, and war, economics and stuff could certainly put a strain on the United States.
It certainly can. And, you know, one of the big issues is, of course, the flow of oil, and that's been the case for a long time. And Iran's a very major producer of oil, so conflict with Iran might very well lead to a diminishment in their oil production. It might lead to economic downturns around the world, and then, of course, a lot of pressure on the United States to change its policy. But there are other oil producers in that region as well, some of them closely aligned with the United States, like Saudi Arabia. And, you know, those people, for instance, the Saudis, they look across the Persian Gulf at Iran, and they don't feel so good about rising power in Iran.
With us is Dr. John Green, professor of political science, University of Akron. John, for a moment before I take this back domestically, talk about this rising alliance with China, Russia, Iran, Egypt, and a number of these countries trying to form their own economic alliance. And actually, they're gaining a lot of support in that part of the world.
Well, you know, behind all of these military questions and security questions are important economic questions. And, of course, China is a rising power economically. They see themselves eventually as challenging the United States for, economic power. And, Russia would like to be part of that. Of course, Russia has its own economic problems because of the war in Ukraine. And you look at a country like Iran, but also other countries, potentially India, Brazil, Egypt, many of the emerging nations in Africa, that would like to have their own trading bloc. They'd like to see a currency other than the dollar be the dominant currency in international trade because they think that that would serve their interests. And one doesn't have to agree with them to recognize that there's some real potential advantages to all of these players in a new economic trading bloc.
Okay, John, let's take this domestically now. You've got the airstrikes from the United States with response into Yemen and beyond over the weekend. Who knows what lies ahead on the military side? And we're right in the middle of a huge political year of 2024 in the race for the president in the Oval Office and the White House. What does something like this do to, one, the incumbent when we talk about President Biden, and how could the former president who's running to get back in there, Donald Trump, take advantage of something like this?
Well, President Biden, of course, being president, faces these issues every single day. And, you know, I think most of his focus is on foreign policy, but there are domestic ramifications. You know, there are elements in the Democratic Party that are very unhappy about American support for Israel. Now, that comes in various nuanced forms, right? There are people who oppose Israel. There are people who just think that, you know, Israel ought to have a ceasefire in Gaza and so forth and so on. And that's something that candidate Biden has to worry about, you know, the progressive wing of his party going into what might be a very, very close presidential election. But there are also other elements in the public in general, but also in the Democratic Party, that are very wary about further engagement in the Middle East. If this conflict were to escalate, we've already, you know, are involved with Israel and Gaza. We're already involved with Ukraine opposing Russia. You know, one more thing on our plate. You know, this is not something that a lot of people are happy about. You know, it's really kind of interesting because the what you might call the neo-isolationist position, which is maybe we shouldn't be involved in any of this stuff or even a lot less of it abroad, has often been championed by Donald Trump. You know, what part of his argument with, you know, make America first again, is that the United States should look out for its national interests narrowly defined. And so there may very well be some opportunities politically for Trump to make those arguments again and perhaps attract some voters.
Very interesting. Dr. John Green, professor of political science, University of Akron. John, last night was the Nevada primary. None of the candidates on the GOP ticket got 63% of the vote. Nikki Haley got 31%. Now, I know she didn't put much of an effort out there, but what does that say going forward? This looks like this is all Donald Trump's ticket here.
It really does. I mean, I think we've known for a long time that Donald Trump has a grip on a strong constituency in the Republican Party. His opponents, which were many beginning last year, have just not really been able to make a significant dent in that. You know, the key primary is coming up at the end of February. It's South Carolina. That's Nikki Haley's state. She served as governor there. She says she can go on, you know, even if she doesn't win the primary. I think in practical terms, if Trump wins South Carolina, then, you know, his road to the nomination is wide open, and Haley's campaign will not do particularly well. So, you know, there's a real prospect here that Trump may be the Republican presidential nominee. This reminds me a lot of 2016, you know, where he faced a number of strong challengers, but prevailed in every step of the way. And, of course, on the Democratic side, it looks very much like President Biden will be renominated. So we could have a rerun, a rematch of the 2020 presidential election.
On the opposite side, news came out yesterday, John, about the judge striking down the former president's request that he be signaled out or not held liable in regards to what he did as president of the United States. The judge said, no, you are responsible. And again, we've had different cross-body blows to the former president a lot in the last couple of years, but none of that has really dinged the armor of those faithful to Donald Trump.
Well, you know, the legal problems of Donald Trump are one of the unique features of this presidential year. So far, as you point out, it really hasn't harmed him. His fundraising remains very strong. He's doing very well in the polls. He's winning nomination contests. Of course, we haven't yet had a trial, and we haven't yet had a conviction. And if such a thing were to happen, it might very well turn out to diminish Trump's prospects, but maybe not. So, you know, this is really quite uncertain.
It is. John, thank you as always, my friend. Thanks for sharing a cup of coffee with me in the morning and great insight into the political arena like you've done for with me now 25 years on the morning show. Always appreciated, my friend.
You're very welcome. Have a good day, Ray.